600 miles east of the wildfire, Wally West sat perched on the third stool at the lunch counter in Hayden's drugstore, polishing off his second chili dog with cheese and onions.
Here's your cherry soda, Wally.
And thanks, Rosie.
Oh, my. You finished with those dogs already? You shouldn't eat so fast. You'll get indigestion.
From your food, Rosie? Never. Not much of the usual lunch crowd in today.
Yeah. A new big belly burger just opened on North Elias. I expect a lot of them are checking it out. I'm surprised you're not there.
Yeah, those places are everywhere. And you can't get a decent chili dog at a burger joint. Now this here is the best old-style pharmacy in Keystone City, and your food is to die for. Oh, and put this on my tab too, Rosie. What do I owe you?
Oh, including the paper? That comes to $6.50, hon.
Cheap at twice the price.
Oh, go on with you.
I mean it. Your food should be considered haute cuisine. Don't ever let anyone tell you differently. Do you hear that?
Oh, hear what? Oh, are those sirens?
Keep the change, Rosie.
Oh, Wally, you sure? Oh, all right then.
Wally West was already 15 blocks away, weaving between the cars on South 10th Street as though they were standing still. A miniature lightning storm seemed to crackle over his body, the speed force forming his sleek scarlet and gold uniform around him as he ran. The flash shot down a ramp under the Hibbert Expressway and headed west out of downtown, nearly outrunning the wail of the sirens. These were no ordinary police, fire, or emergency vehicle sirens. He had already recognized them as belonging to a special class of civil defense sirens. Wally's grandfather once told him how they were installed during World War II to warn of enemy air raids. Ever since the war's end, they had been used to warn of a different kind of aerial attack. 5 miles beyond the municipality's westernmost industrial park, a tornado roared along the expressway, closing fast on Keystone City. Racing past the city's suburbs, the Flash saw the twister.
Whoa, this is a big one.
The funnel was 1,000 feet across at its base, and it reached up into the sky for miles. It was shot through with shutters, doors, and sections of shingled roofs. The twisted wreckage of cars and trucks, all apparently abandoned, bobbed about in the cyclonic winds. The air was brown all around the funnel cloud, day turning into night.
Well, no time to waste.
Circling the tornado's base, the Flash quickened his pace, moving in closer and closer until he was caught up by the winds and drawn bodily up into the tornado's funnel. Then, in defiance of the power of the cyclone, he spun himself around and seized control of his course. Legs pumping madly, he spiraled up along the inside of the funnel. So fast did he move that he was able to run across the airborne debris as though it were frozen in midair. And still he continued to accelerate, becoming a crackling streak of crimson in the tornado's upper reaches. In his wake, he generated a powerful downdraft, counter to the twister's updraft. The tornado began to slow, to shudder, and then, with one ground-flattening whoosh of air, it was blown out. Debris rained down on the countryside, and the Flash found himself in free fall, 1.5 miles above the ground. He started drumming his feet, faster, ever faster, compressing a column of air beneath him to slow and cushion his fall. As the Flash touched down, he kicked up a huge cloud of dust and shot across the prairie, traveling 1/4 mile before he could brake to a stop. Debris continued to fall all around him for another 3 minutes, and he vibrated the molecules of his body, allowing the ruined fragments to pass harmlessly through him. For a single blessed moment, all was calm.
What the?
Wally turned to see a second tornado as big as the first, bearing down fast.
Oh, man. Looks like this is gonna be one of those days.
Kyle Rayner sat down at a table by the window of an Anchorage coffee shop and opened his sketch pad, flipping past the landscapes he'd sketched earlier that morning. As Green Lantern, he had spent the weekend in Alaska helping people dig out and rebuild after the earthquake and storm. But today, Kyle had switched from mask and uniform to a pair of well-worn jeans and a brand new Iditarod Trail sweatshirt.
He had willed his power ring to become invisible and set out to see the local sights, committing many of them to paper. He was finally on vacation and enjoying the break very much.
Good morning. Welcome to Got Your Coffee. We got your coffee
right here. Sorry, I know the slogan and the jingle by heart. Can't forget them. I worked on that campaign.
Oh, you're in advertising?
Sometimes. I'm a freelance artist. Kyle Rayner.
Hi, I'm Shelley Ritter. That's Shelley with an I.
Really? You know, I created a character who spells her name that way.
A character?
Yeah, I also write and draw the City Dwellers comic strip. For Feast magazine.
I don't think I've ever heard of Feast. Is it about food?
Not really. It's more about music and fashion and urban lifestyles.
I see. Well, what kind of gotcha can I get you?
I'll have a Bananarama Cappuccino Grande.
Sure. Coming right up.
As the waitress started to walk away, the air around the second finger of Kyle's right hand began to flicker with a green light.
Uh-oh.
Quickly, he closed the sketch pad over his hand and willed the light into the infrared part of the spectrum.
Yes? Is there something else?
No, but you'd better make that to go. Adam, is that you?
Kyle willed his ring visible, and it generated a tiny holographic image of Ray Palmer's head.
Yes, Kyle, I'm calling about these aberrant weather patterns.
Aberrant weather patterns?
Well, you haven't been watching the news?
No, sorry. I've sort of been kicking back. Don't tell me there have been more typhoons or tsunamis.
No.
Oh, that's good.
Just impenetrable fog, flooding, killer hail, lightning, snowstorms, wildfires, and tornadoes. The last three still ongoing.
Yow. So, do you need me to tackle the fires? The tornadoes?
Neither. John and Wally are dealing with them. I need your help with a situation that's hit my own hometown. A blizzard swept into the Finger Lakes yesterday afternoon, dropped at least a foot of snow throughout the county, with even more in the city of Ivytown.
Whoa, wait. A blizzard in the middle of June? Even for upstate New York, isn't that a little extreme?
Very extreme, Kyle. I grew up in Ivytown, and we've never had snow past Memorial Day. The outlying areas have sometimes had a flurry or two in very early June, but not the city or the campus, and never a blizzard. The storm was so bad that the sheriff's department ordered the roads closed to all but emergency vehicles. That kept accidents down to a minimum. But today, just as everyone was starting to dig out, the winds picked up and another storm hit. From what readings I've been able to take, it's still in progress. And this time, it seems to be centered right over Ivy University.
Bizarre.
I know, Kyle, but it's true. I've had confirmation. A friend of mine, a fellow physicist, has snowshoed to the physics building this morning after the first storm to check on a special experiment in the grad students who are running it. And now I'm afraid they may all be trapped in there.
May?
I'm not sure, Kyle. I have a private lab in that building with a satellite uplink. Dr. DeGrini was using that equipment to brief me on the weather when the link went down. I haven't been able to reestablish contact. My alma mater's getting plastered. My friend might be stuck in a building with very little heat, and fighting the weather's a little beyond the scope of my power. Can you help us?
Sure. Just give me a minute. I've just got to recharge my ring.
Kyle swept the beam of his power ring across the top of a bureau, and the illusion of a table lamp dissolved away, revealing his power battery. The emerald battery resembled a stylized lantern and was both the inspiration for his name and the source of his incredible power. It was a creation of the Guardians of Oa, an ancient race nearly as old as the universe itself. Over the millennia, the Guardians had bequeathed such batteries to select individuals whom they had deemed worthy. Kyle approached the power battery with reverence. Touching his ring to its surface, he could feel the awesome energy flow. And as he stood charging his ring, he began to recite a solemn oath, an oath that had become legendary long before his time.
In brightest day, in blackest night, no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power, Green Lantern's light.
Now fully charged, the power ring enabled the young man to perform virtual miracles, limited only by the force of his will and the scope of his imagination. Kyle turned the light of the ring back on himself, and in a burst of energy, his clothing was transformed into the proud uniform of the Green Lantern. Gathering his will, Green Lantern rose up from the floor and flew out the window. He streaked up and away from the Alaskan city, faster than any missile. In seconds, he was on the edge of space. Shielded from the vacuum by the power of his ring, Green Lantern tapped into the global positioning system and rocketed east across North America. He reestablished communications with the Watchtower as he crossed into New York State.
Do you read me? I'm currently about 8 miles high over Lake Ontario, crossing over the southern shore and continuing my descent. I think... yes, I can see Rochester just off to my right.
Roger that, Lantern. I have you on my screens. Ivytown's about 80 miles due south of your position. Can you see it from there?
A pair of glowing emerald binoculars took form before Kyle's eyes.
Negative, Adam. I can see the lake. Anderson Lake, right? And a couple of outlying villages, but the city is totally socked in. Looks like there's a big swirling cloud sitting on top of it.
I was afraid of that. The last word I was able to get through the ground relays before they went down as well was that Fox County Airport had closed.
Well, at least I won't have to worry about air traffic. Here goes nothing.
Green Lantern dove into the cloud bank. Instantly, he was surrounded by driving, blinding snow. Seconds later, his GPS link cut out. Kyle attuned his ring to act as radar and continued his descent into the bowl-like valley.
Lantern, are you there?
Adam, you're breaking up. Hold on.
Green Lantern came to a stop amid the swirling storm. He fired a thin, coherent beam of energy up through the cloud cover.
Can you hear me now?
Loud and clear, GL. I tried to warn you, the storm's kicking up a lot of electromagnetic interference. It makes communications difficult at best.
Well, we won't have that problem any longer. My ring was just picking up your broadcast before, but now I've set up my own personal link to the watchtower.
Good thinking. What's the situation like on the ground?
Well below freezing. My ring's telling me it's -2. This is a full-tilt blizzard if ever there was one. I'd send a video signal up the link, but between the snow and the wind, there's not much to show.
Can you tell me exactly where you are now?
Let me check.
Green Lantern expanded his aura, pushing back the snow while leaving everything else around him undisturbed. Under the green glow, a sidewalk, curb, and roadbed stood out in sharp relief.
Looks like I'm on a street heading up the East Hill. Yeah, here's a street sign. I'm at the intersection of Turner Street and Anbinder Avenue.
Good. You're almost at Ivy University. If you turn north onto Anbinder, University Drive is 3 blocks ahead on your right, just past the Mr. Bagel.
Sounds like a plan. Okay, Adam, I'm turning onto University. Winds are a lot worse here. Visibility's dropping. I'm extending a power field ahead of me to screen out new snow. Okay, I see the gates of IVU now.
Good, good. New Hall Library should be coming up on your left. Just past that is East Campus Drive.
Yeah, I see the library building. Man, campus has been hit way harder than the lower valley. These drifts must be 6 feet deep. Whoops, there's Campus Drive. Almost didn't see it.
Turn left there. About 100 yards ahead on the right is a service drive that will take you to Turnbull Hall. That's where my friend Dr. Greeny called from.
On my throat! This is totally unreal. When did you last hear from your friend?
What is it? What's wrong?
Your Turnbull Hall is covered in the white stuff, and I mean covered. The whole thing looks frosted. Winds whipping around the building like a mini cyclone, and snowdrifts reach up to the second floor. And some of the windows are broken.
Kyle, you have to get in there.
Relax, Dr. Palmer. GL's snow removal is on the case. Nothing to worry about.
Oh, of course.
What? What was that sound?
There's trees falling from the wind.
Another big limb flew through the sky, slamming into the side of Turnbull Hall. Branches and debris, driven by gale winds, began raining down on the snowbound building.
Well, that explains the broken windows.
Green Lantern quickly expanded his aura to cast a protective hemisphere over the immediate area. He then concentrated, his eyes narrowing to slits behind his mask. Energy again erupted from his power ring, this time taking on the form of a gigantic snow shovel. The shovel flew up under the dome, floated briefly alongside the building, and then came down hard into the story and a half-high drift. A long crack inched its way across the frigid surface as the emerald shovel drove several yards into the ice-encrusted snow.
Green Lantern, what's happening?
We're almost there, Doc. I just have to reseat the blade.
He channeled his will through the power ring, backing the shovel off a few feet before driving it hard into the opening it had made in the drift. It drove closer to the building, and then the facing snow fell away from one side of Turnbull Hall, collapsing in sheets before the side door.
Yeah! I'm through!
The giant shovel suddenly divided in two, scooping the crusty snow away from the entrance.
I'm heading inside, Ray.
Glad to hear.
Hello in there? Can anybody hear me?
Over here!
Kyle turned down the hall, and four figures came into view. In the lead was a statuesque brunette, followed closely by a shorter black woman and two red-haired young men. All were wearing jackets over lab coats in a vain attempt to ward off the chill.
Dr. Negrini?
Yes. I am Enrica Negrini. These are my laboratory assistants, Shauna Waller and Blaine and Dennis Trigger.
Hi, I'm Green Lantern.
He shook hands and turned back to Enrica. Her hair was pulled back, and she, like the others, looked rumpled and tired. But the artist in Kyle immediately saw past the surface details to the gorgeous face beneath.
Doc Palmer sent me. Here, let me make you all a little more comfortable.
Suddenly, little green space heaters encircled the four with warmth.
Grazie, Green Lantern. Thank you. The heat had been shut off for the summer. When the building lost power and the windows started breaking, it was hard to keep warm. Is Ray, Dr. Palmer with you?
In spirit. Sort of. Ray, say hi.
Ricky, are you all right?
We are now, Raymond. Thanks to your friend.
Hold on a sec. Listen. There's no more storm.
Green Lantern led the party outside. It was true. Since he'd entered the building, the blizzard winds had noticeably decreased. The barrage of shattered trees had ended, and the snow was diminishing to little more than a few errant flakes. Through the pale green of the dome, they could see the clouds begin to break. In minutes, the sun was shining down, and Kyle tentatively opened the dome. Though the snow still lay piled in huge, dazzling white drifts, there was a new warm breeze that spoke of summer.
Cross your fingers, Doc, but I think the worst is over.
Is it, Lantern? That's what I thought after Anchorage. Now, I'm not so sure.
On the south side of Chicago, a chill wind blew through the open door of a tavern. A tall, dark-haired man stood for a moment on the threshold, waiting for the tint of his photosensitive aviator glasses to adjust to the change in light.
Hey, close that door.
Oh, hey, sorry, pal. Talk about being the Windy City, huh?
The man sidled up to the bar, showing a lot of teeth under his mustache.
Hey, give me a cool brown doc, will you?
He leaned an elbow against the bar and nodded to the row of men already there.
Ooh, boy. Colder than a brass monkey out there. Great to be back in Chicago, though. My name's Malone.
He held out his hand as if to offer a shake, but then, with a quick flip of his wrist, produced a kitchen match out of midair.
My friends call me Matches.
That's a nice cute trick.
The man slapped a 20 on the bar.
Hey, thanks, buddy. You got a nice place here. Hey, I hear that my old buddy Mark blew through town a few weeks back. You wouldn't have seen him, would you?
We get a lot of guys through here.
Oh, you'd remember Mark if you saw him. Pale blue eyes, dark hair. Darker than mine, even. Stands about 6'1", a lanky guy.
Sorry, don't ring a bell with me. Here's your change, mister.
Malone put a hand over the money and eased it back across the bar.
I'd really like to hook up with him. I owe him $50, and if I know Mark, he could use it, huh? Hey, wait a minute.
He reached into his wallet and pulled out a tattered snapshot.
Here, see? This is me and Mark in South Philly just a few years back.
The bartender palmed the cash and looked hard at the photo.
Oh, yeah. There is something familiar about that face. But I can't quite place him. Hey, Jackie, you got a pretty good memory. You ever see this guy around?
Huh? Oh, sure. I seen him. He was in here about a month ago, left with that big guy. The one who looked like Jesus. Only had shoulders at the head. Remember, Lou? He bought a round for the house.
Mark bought a round? That doesn't sound like him at all.
No, not the guy in the photo, the Jesus guy.
Oh, yeah. The guy with the beard and the tan. Looks like he'd been out in the sun a lot. Him, I'll never forget. Hey, your buddy Mark ever wear a tweed cap?
Sometimes.
Okay, I remember him now. He was here all right. The middle of last month, I think it was. They left with Mr. Jesus of Malibu, and I ain't seen him since.
That's Mark for you. Always making friends, wherever he goes.
Yeah, well, friends like that one he can keep to himself.
Aw, oh, come on, Lou. The guy bought us around. His money was good. You said so.
His money was good, yeah, but the creep had an attitude. Listen, he tried to come across like a big spender, but he had a way of moving all high and mighty. Like he thought he was too good for the room, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I do. You wouldn't happen to know where they went.
Sorry, Malone. wish I could help you. I don't have a clue.
They was going to the airport. That's where they went.
The airport? You sure of that?
Oh, pretty sure. See, we was watching a ball game. When a commercial came on, I went to the can, and I passed right by that booth in the back where they were sitting. As I was walking by, I heard Jesus say something about how they had a world to cross. And I don't think they was planning to walk it. Anyway, when I came out of the can, they was gone.
Pal, let me buy you a drink. In fact, what the heck? Drinks for the house! Let's all hoist one to old Mark.
All right! Another lucky day.
The regulars gathered around, eagerly toasting Mark, then matches, and finally, the Chicago Cubs. Malone graciously accepted their thanks and filtered among the others, casually asking them what they could remember about Mark and his new friend. By the time Matches took his leave, spirits in the tavern were so high that no one noticed he had hardly touched his beer. Malone left the bar, pulling his collar up against the gale. He walked no more than 2 blocks down the street before stopping at a corner. He plucked the match from between his teeth and snapped his thumbnail against the head.
Will you be dressing up or down for the next gin mill, Mr. Malone?
Neither, Alfie. I thought we had paid her in that last dive.
Splendid. Am I correct in assuming that the doctored photo did the trick?
I'll say it did. They bought it completely. Even I was starting to believe that I'd been in Philadelphia with Martin. Get us out of here.
Certainly. Where to?
O'Hare. Go north to 95th Street, then west to the Tri-State.
The car pulled away, and Malone settled back into the seat. He doffed his aviator glasses and peeled away his mustache. From his nostrils, he pulled a pair of flexible appliances that had broadened his nose. But it was not until he had removed the wig that Bruce Wayne dropped the voice of Matches Malone. As Wayne used a treated cloth to remove the last vestiges of his assumed identity, Alfred steered the sedan through the Chicago traffic.
Your quarry departed by air, then?
That's the best guess, Alfred. Martin left in the company of a large, powerfully built man. Most of that tavern's patrons described him as tanned, but one said he looked mixed. All of them agreed that he had a beard.
You don't think...
Wouldn't be the first time my old enemy has done some of his own field work. At any rate, I want to check through the airport security files.
Wayne reached down and pulled a laptop computer from a compartment under the front seat.
Ah. Ribs still smarting, sir?
That mirror's for keeping an eye on traffic, Alfred, not on me.
I quite understand your desire to keep your wits about you, but you could take something for the pain. Ibuprofen, at the very least.
I'll take that under advisement, Doctor.
The visit to a physician would not hurt in the least. I have Dr. Tompkins on speed dial.
No. Leslie would just want me to take it easy.
What was I thinking? Oh, yes, that you should spend some time in actual recuperation. And it wouldn't hurt you to get some sun and fresh air. You could lounge beside the pool, as young playboys are supposed to do.
Alfred, did you say sun?
Yes. It's apparently been quite pleasant at home these past few days, according to the papers.
A new window opened on Bruce Wayne's computer screen, showing a webcam view of a park in downtown Gotham City. The sun beamed down brightly from a clear blue sky. A flag flew proudly in a light breeze.
77 degrees Fahrenheit, light to moderate winds. Interesting. The weather is just about perfect.
Well, it was bound to happen sooner or later, sir. Gotham can't be dark and dank all the time.
And yet, the weather is wretched over much of the country. Droughts, flooding, severe storms, and unseasonable temperatures from coast to coast. There's even a report of a blizzard today in upstate New York.
Part of your adversary's master plan?
Perhaps. But why spare Gotham unless... Of course. The worst of the weather has hit regions associated with members of the Justice League, and he's assuming that he already dealt with me. No need to pick on the old hometown if the person you most want to be devil isn't there.
Sir, are you smiling?
I fooled him, Alfred. The would-be overlord can be tricked, which means he can be brought down. All we have to do is find him.
...25,000 feet over the island of Crete, Superman turned north and shot toward the Aegean Sea at twice the speed of sound. Within minutes, he was over the Cyclades Islands, beginning a rapid descent toward one particular isle. It was barely a mile across, a rocky crag of an island whose cliffs rose steeply from the sea. A series of lavish buildings, patterned after the temples of the ancient Greeks, had been built at great expense atop its peaks by an eccentric billionaire who called himself Konstantin Stratos. Stratos remained very much a mystery to the Man of Steel. Their one meeting had lasted just a few minutes, and much of what he knew about the man he had learned after the fact. Konstantin Stratos had been a foundling, abandoned as an infant at the foot of Greece's Mount Olympus. As he reached adulthood, he had become delusional, convinced that he was a child of the gods and that he too would one day rise to join their ranks. Impatient for power, Stratos exploited a talent for particle physics and computer design to amass a sizable fortune. He then exhausted much of that fortune building his island retreat and funding research aimed at giving him control over the world's weather. Former research associates testified that he thought he was descended from Zeus, that he worked and schemed for the day when he too would be able to hurl thunderbolts down from on high. With that as his goal, Dr. Stratos had designed a satellite that he launched into Earth orbit. Once his satellite was operational, he began bombarding the atmosphere with bursts of focused particle beams, causing radical shifts in weather patterns across the entire globe. There was no way of telling how much damage he might have caused if his ego hadn't trumped his intelligence. The doctor had called the White House and taken full credit for his handiwork. He informed the president that he would make his full list of demands upon the world when they next spoke. But they never spoke again. Superman had dealt with Dr. Stratos. It had not been an easy mission for the Man of Tomorrow. He'd encountered a gauntlet of hurricane winds, driving ice storms, and punishing lightning strikes. The memory kept Superman on his guard. It was a lot like the recent weird weather, telescoped into a few hours. He swooped low over the island, circling warily before he landed. It appeared completely deserted. Its buildings still bore the locks and seals he had placed on them so long ago. He had named this place Castle Chaos, the perfect name for the home of such an unstable mind. Dr. Stratos had programmed a death trap, a devastating particle beam barrage aimed at the Man of Steel. The particle beam had driven Superman to his knees, but then the trap backfired on its planner in horrific fashion. Stratos himself had been caught by the edge of the deadly blast, and Superman was unable to save him. When it was all over, the Man of Steel dismantled both Stratos' command center and his satellite. Now, after all these years, Superman again strode through the grounds. He searched the estate inch by inch, but he could find no sign either of Stratos or of anything connected with his satellite program. After hours of thorough inspection, Superman stood on an outcropping, staring out to sea. Another dead end. From below, a small fishing boat chugged into view. A whiskery old man looked up from the wheel and waved. Superman waved back.
Yes, sir! Adios, Superman!
The Man of Steel stepped off into space and dropped like a stone toward the sea below. But as he fell, his fall began to slow. He came to a smooth stop and stood in midair, just off the deck of the small vessel.
Yes, I am.
You... Welcome! Let me turn this off. Welcome! Please, come aboard. I am Marcus. Marcus Papadiomedes. I apologize. My English is not so good.
No apologies necessary, Mr. Papadiomedes. Your English certainly sounds much better than my Greek.
Please, Superman, Marcus. Everybody calls me Marcus.
Then so shall I, Marcus. Do you work these waters?
A little. The fishing here anymore is not so good. Not like when I was a boy, and even then it was not great. But my father did this, and his father, and his. So I fish a little, and I take tourists out to see the sights. What brings you to this cursed place?
Just satisfying my curiosity, Marcus. Some years ago, I had a nasty encounter with the owner of that estate. A gentleman named Stratos.
Gentleman? Better you should call him a madman. I have heard stories, my friend. How he brought fire down from the skies. But still, he could not kill you, eh?
No, but not for lack of trying. And he slowed me down so much that I couldn't save him from the fire. He fell, burning, into the sea. It's always bothered me that I was never able to find his body down there.
You looked in the wrong place. Stratos washed ashore on Keith Moss, 3 miles west of here.
What? When was this?
3, maybe 4 days after he brought down the fire.
You're sure of that?
Sure. It was my own cousin Costas who found him. Such birds Costas had never seen. He said Stratos was raving mad. Like he was not before, eh?
He was still alive? After 3 days in the sea?
3, maybe 4. It's a mystery how he survived. But Costa said that night there was a blinding light in the heavens, and the sea churned just before he found the madman. And Costas, he's not one for tall tales.
Did your cousin say how long he lived after that?
Stratos? For all I know, he lives still. Costas told me how the doctors took him away to a big hospital in Galatea, near Athens.
Marcus, this may be very important. Can you tell me the name of the hospital?
But of course. It is very famous. It is named for Hippocrates.
Thank you, Marcus. You've been a great help to me. But now you must excuse me.
Of course, I am. It was an honor, Superman! The greatest honor!
No, that's not right.
And Kali Thea, Dr. Marina Papagas, looked up from her paperwork as a tall, broad-shouldered figure dressed in blue and red was ushered into her office. He crossed the room and offered his hand as she rose to greet him.
Thank you for agreeing to see me on such short notice, Dr. Papagas. I apologize for the imposition.
It's no imposition at all, Superman. Please make yourself comfortable.
Thank you, Doctor.
My assistant said that you wish to inquire about one of our residents.
Yes, Constantine Stratos.
Ah, Constantinos. I had not yet become director of the Hippocrates Institute when he was brought here, but I know his case well. He is a strange, sad one.
What can you tell me about him?
Well, you must understand that his medical records are closed as a matter of privacy.
Of course. But you do realize that Stratos was once implicated in an act of international terrorism. I find it curious that there's no record of either the U.S. or the Greek government ever taking any action against him.
That would be a pointless exercise, Superman. Dr. Stratos suffered severe burns that left him not only disfigured, but also partially paralyzed. He has limited mobility, and to be blunt, he's mentally unbalanced. His own mind and body are more of a prison than steel bars could ever be. A gentleman from the American Embassy came to question him some years ago, and he left satisfied on that score.
I see. Well, would there be any objection to my speaking with him?
That can be arranged. I must warn you, he's quite delusional.
I'm sure he is, Doctor. Even so, I doubt that he'll be happy to see me, at least dressed like this. Could I trouble you for something a little less identifiable?
Moments later, an orderly admitted the Man of Steel, now wearing plain green hospital scrubs over his garb, to a small, dimly lit room. The large hospital bed that dominated the space lay empty. Its occupant sat slumped in a wheelchair a few feet to one side. He was dressed in white from head to foot. The first thing Superman noticed about Stratos was that his nose was gone. The fire had taken it, leaving a partially bisected hole in its place. The man's hair had similarly been burned away, never to return, and a snug-fitting beret now protected his scalp. The cap was pulled down low, ending just above the two unnaturally smooth nubs that had once been ears. The skin that showed between his collar and the beret was a blotchy pink and pulled very tight across his face. There was a shiny quality to it, as if the man had been sealed in plastic.
Dr. Stratos?
The eyes, which had been staring off into space, suddenly swiveled around in their sockets and focused on the disguised Superman. Teeth flashed behind the tight lips.
Who dares speak unbidden to your god, the Lord Stratos?
Superman paused for a moment and decided to play along.
I beg your forgiveness, my lord. I am but a humble sinner who has come from far away in search of that which only you can provide.
Very well, mortal. Sit here, beside your lord. What do you wish of Stratos? Speak!
I seek knowledge, Lord Stratos. It is written that before you achieved godhood, You walked among us as a man and employed great machines to command the weather.
This is so. Go on, Mortal.
It is also said that you fought an epic battle against a man of steel and were cast into the fire. Do you recall that?
Man of steel. Yes, I remember him. The mortals call him a Superman. He survived our first encounter, but he shall not survive the next.
Whatever you say, Lord Stratus. According to the stories I have been told, after the fire, you fell into the sea. They say you were as a dead man for 3 days, or perhaps four.
No.
No?
As I fell,
I was surrounded by a holy light and drawn up into the heavens. There, I was tempted by a false god.
A false god?
He treated the mortal wounds and banished the pain of my earthly form. But he gave only false succor. He sought...
Stratus raised one hand, stiff and misshapen under its protective cotton glove, to a small, circular depression at his right temple. He softly stroked the spot with his claw-like hand, as if trying to prod a long-lost memory.
Who was this false god? What did he seek?
Chaos.
Chaos? You mean he sought your castle, Chaos?
Yes. He claimed to be a god in the service of Chaos, yes. But all he really sought were the designs of my satellite. He wanted to know how it worked, how it made the energy flow. He coveted my secrets for controlling the weather. That's when I knew he was a pretender. Don't you see? What need has a god of a satellite?
You confuse me, my lord. Didn't you build and use that satellite?
That was before.
Stratus thrust out a hand and clutched at his visitor's scrubs.
I needed the machines only in the beginning. Once I was elevated to the pantheon of Olympus, I no longer needed such devices.
I see. Then you didn't tell him what he wanted to know.
I told him it would do him no good. The power was no longer in the machines. It was in me. It had become part of my godhead. He wouldn't listen. The pretender would not believe the word of a true god. He tried to take advantage of me.
How could he have done that, my lord? Didn't you just say that the power was already in you?
Yes, of course. But I was still in a transitional state. And that snake was determined to rob me of my glory. He kept probing.
Superman's gaze went back to the odd depression at Stratus's right temple. There was, he now realized, a similar one on the left. They were the only parts of his head that seemed even remotely symmetrical. The Man of Tomorrow concentrated, looking beneath the layers of scar tissue, and located two tiny indentations, long-healed, on either side of the man's skull.
My God, someone actually probed your brain, didn't they? They probed your brain and then threw you back into the sea.
Which was just what I wanted. Poseidon bore me back into the arms of Gaia, as I knew he would. And now, here I sit, lord of all about me.
Haven't you told anyone else of this?
I speak, but they do not listen. The god Stratus now shares nothing with non-believers. I speak only to the faithful.
Lord Stratus, do you know who did that to you?
I already told you. It was a pretender.
But who was the pretender? What did he call himself?
It is of no matter. He can do nothing more to me. Now that I have achieved full godhead.
If he learned how your satellite worked, he could do a great deal.
It is not possible. It would no longer work for him. I am the power now. Do you doubt me? Do you doubt the power of Stratus?
Of course not, my lord. But perhaps, if you could show me some small sign of your power, I would have something with which to instill faith in those friends of mine who do not yet believe.
You seek to deceive me!
I wish only to—
Silence! Those who associate with disbelievers are themselves disbelievers! You wish a sign? Very well! May fire rain down from the heavens and slay you, betrayer! No, no, no. Let the waters of the sea rise up to drown you! Yes! And now, let the earth herself open up and swallow you whole!
Stratos never noticed Superman leaving the room. To him, the visitor was already gone from his sight. The burned man slumped back in his wheelchair, lost in a world of his own. The Man of Steel found Dr. Papagas waiting for him in the corridor.
Were you able to appease the great god Stratos, or did he consign you to Hades?
More the latter than the former, I'm afraid. But for a moment or two, I'd swear he was almost lucid.
Oh, you should be honored then, Superman. Such moments are rare.
Doctor, there doesn't appear to have been any attempt at reconstructive surgery. Why is that? I would think that giving him a nose, if nothing else, would be therapeutic.
I agree. In fact, several staff members have suggested that. But Konstantinos has no family to authorize such a procedure. And whenever the subject has been broached with him, he has rejected it out of hand. You see, part of the delusion is that he has already achieved his most perfect form.
Superman looked back through the door at the twisted man.
Doctor, was Stratos ever subjected to experimental therapy? Or perhaps had his brain physically probed as part of any treatment?
What? No. There have been some CAT scans, but that's all.
I didn't mean to suggest that the Institute would be party to anything unethical. I meant before his arrival here.
No. Did he make such a claim? More delusions.
Yes, no doubt.
But still, Superman wondered. Were Stratos' claims nothing more than insane ramblings? Or did they hold a kernel of truth? He had seen the marks on the man's skull with his own eyes. And if there was any truth to what he said, who was the mysterious false god?
Come on, Crawl, move!
On my part, how else could have gotten back here?
I went to the
thing.
And I know.
Makes a better chowder than clam.
Hello. And welcome to Metropolitan Tonight. I'm Rick Raymond, here with a special report. Fog, floods, and weather most foul. Last summer, Europe sweltered under a blistering heat wave, while tropical storms battered American coastlines. Drought-stricken western states coughed up dust, while vast stretches of the Midwest had more water than they could handle. With that freakish weather still fresh in mind, we all hoped that this year would be better. Well, don't get your hopes up. Even before the summer solstice passed, another season of weird weather was already upon us. Consider. Following a sudden storm that resulted in an estimated $160 million in property damage, a 10-inch diameter hailstone was recovered in Gateway City. The stone topped the record 7-incher that fell on Aurora, Nebraska, almost exactly a year earlier. Repair work on Star City's landmark Capstone Bridge was halted when high winds and driving sleet threatened to send workers and scaffolding into Cazenove Bay. 143, yes, 143 tornadoes struck northeastern Kansas in a 12-hour period. Over 200,000 homes and businesses in St. Roch, Louisiana, were without power for 4 days after a sudden storm brewed up over the Mississippi River Delta, flooding sections of the parish and hammering the area with 70-mile-per-hour winds. And even as this issue of News Time was being composed, a sudden fog formed along Metropolis's I-995 beltway near the busy Besalo Interchange, resulting in a 37-vehicle pileup. In the latter incident, motorists experienced a bit of good luck for a change. A van full of emergency medical technicians en route to a training symposium was one of the first vehicles to safely come upon the scene. The EMTs were able to stabilize the accident victims until further help arrived in the form of Superman. The fog prevented rescue helicopters from taking off, but the Man of Steel was able to fly crash survivors, medics, and entire ambulances to regional trauma centers. In fact, if there has been any silver lining to the recent storm clouds, it is that active and reserve members of the Justice League of America have been nearby to help when foul weather struck. But even superheroes can't be everywhere. And the National Climatic Data Center says that current weather patterns are quite unlike anything anyone has seen since records were first kept. Whether this is the result of global warming remains unknown, but if the past few days are any indication, we may all be in for an uncertain summer. Of course, uncertain weather is nothing new to many people. In recent decades, there have been numerous fluctuations in the world's climate patterns. We've all become attuned to phenomena such as El Niño and La Niña and the shifts they have caused in climate patterns. But the past few days have seen a series of radical weather events, striking hard and seemingly at random in relatively small areas, a city or a township, for instance, and often for a very brief time. The duration of these events has been for as little as 30 minutes and as long as 4 hours. And in many cases, they have not significantly been felt in the regions directly surrounding them. That now appears to be changing, however, as these radical events have been so numerous that they have also begun to alter the jet stream. Experts at the National Weather Service now believe that this most recent siege actually began last month with a series of smaller weather anomalies along the East Coast. At the time, they were considered nothing more than minor fluctuations, just typical seasonal annoyances. But it is now thought that they were just the beginning of some larger shift in patterns that could make for a very unpredictable summer. A word of advice: keep that umbrella handy. For Metropolitan Tonight, this is Rick Raymond.
Lois Lane walked onto the west terrace of the San Diego Convention Center. She strolled past a series of big potted plants and stood beside a low wall, staring out at the hundreds of boats tied up in the marina below. A gentle breeze wafted over the dockside promenade.
A nice change after the weather back east, isn't it?
Oh, tell me about it. It's been so wet in Metropolis that moss is starting to grow on everyone's north side. How have you been, Kat?
Fabulous as always, darling.
Catherine Jane Grant leaned one hip against the wall and kicked out of her heels.
Ah, fabulous, but weary. The new talk show has had me on the road for months, but it's been worth it in market share. You still slogging around the country for the dear old Daily Planet?
Afraid so. On top of my regular work, I've been filling in on the Washington beat while Sue McMaster's out on maternity leave.
Get out! Little Susie's having a baby?
She's due any day. With twins, in fact. Oh, I really think Perry sent me on this assignment as a reward. This is heavenly. I couldn't stand being cooped up inside another moment. Had to take a break and catch some sun and fresh air.
Especially after enduring all the hot air in there, huh?
The speeches were getting to be a bit tedious. I'm actually a little surprised to find you here, Kat. No offense, but your show doesn't usually cover such high-tech public works.
Too true, darling. But this new desalinization project's attracting a lot of A-list support. And celebrity interviews are my lifeblood.
I hear that.
Catherine Grant had started out as a gossip columnist for a major Los Angeles newspaper. She'd gained a reputation for her in-depth interviews with Hollywood celebrities and had been linked romantically with several famous leading men. As her fame grew, she had been lured to Metropolis, where she'd continued her popular column for the Daily Planet's entertainment section. But the camera loved Kat, and she soon moved on to a series of jobs at GBS, first as a co-host of Hollywood Tonight, and eventually as the star and executive producer of her own highly rated talk show. Lois sometimes envied Kat's glamorous career. Kat lived in a world of five-star hotels and first-class travel. Lois tended to fly coach. Kat glanced back at the convention center.
Honestly, Lois, I don't know how you've managed to make sense of all that mumbo-jumbo about distillation and subliminalization.
Sublimation, Kat.
Whatever. Seriously, I don't know how you stayed awake. It isn't as if those people in there are going to do anything but talk. I usually see you interviewing people who actually accomplish things. You're such a go-getter. You skydive, for heaven's sake. And I'll bet you've never had to wear heels unless you really wanted to. I envy that.
Oh, thank you. As for the conference, all jargon aside, it is a very important project. California can't survive without water, and there isn't nearly enough available for future needs.
Careful, Lois. You're starting to sound like a candidate. And heaven knows we've had enough of them lately.
Well, it's about time somebody started thinking about solutions to these problems. Otherwise, our children are going to be stuck with them.
Not mine.
Oh, Kat. I'm sorry.
Kat blinked back a tear. Her son, Adam, had been killed just a few years before.
I'll be all right. It's just that it still hurts.
I know. No, that's not right. I don't know, but...
Lois, you're a good friend. Sometimes it just hits me out of the blue. I guess that between hearing about Susie's twins and you're talking about... Lois, don't tell me that you and Clark are...
Are what?
Expecting.
No, of course not. I mean, we've talked about it, but...
Darling! Married all this time and all you've done about it is talk?
You know what I mean.
Just teasing, love. But I am a little surprised that the two of you haven't already spawned.
Kat, we both have careers that keep us constantly on the go. We're too busy to raise a family right now.
Well, who isn't? But that's never stopped most people.
Then I guess we're not most people.
No, you're not. So tell me, how is the hunky Mr. Kent these days? Or should I ask, where is he?
Right behind you.
How long has he been standing there?
Only since, so tell me.
Clark, darling, so wonderful to see you. Ooh, that's not easy without heels. Lois didn't tell me you were here on assignment together.
We're not, Kat. I'm actually chasing down a different story. But I thought that as long as I was in the area...
Yes, dear?
I'd drop by and see if you were interested in taking a little break. But if I'm interrupting anything important...
Hardly. Lois and I were just having a little girl talk. Oh, and I really do need to get back and see if I can buttonhole the governor. You two have fun now.
She scooped up her shoes and with a wave and a wink to Lois, dashed back into the convention center.
So, what did you have in mind, Mr. Kent?
I thought an early lunch, maybe a walk along the beach.
Clark stooped down and pulled a large wicker picnic hamper out from behind one of the concrete planters.
I came prepared.
Don't you always? But the beach is so far away.
Not for us.
Moments later, Clark knelt down beside Lois on a blanket on Coronado Beach. She sat back, feeling the sand shift beneath the soft flannel, and drank in the salty air.
Oh, this was a lovely idea.
Well, we've missed sharing meals so many times in the past few weeks. I decided that I had to do something about that.
Well, it's good to grab hold of moments like this and enjoy them while we can. Beautiful days like these don't last forever.
No, they don't. Not even here. Just 2 days ago, waterspouts were spotted off the North Island Naval Air Station. They came within 50 feet of the shore before they just disappeared.
Clark, you can't stop the weather.
No, but someone is playing with it, and I don't know who.
You're sure of that?
Absolutely sure. No. But I can't shake the feeling that...
What is it, Clark? What's the matter?
I flew to the Aegean yesterday and found Dr. Stratus. His brain had been tapped into. But I thought he had died after I fought him. After I got back to the States, I did some more checking and discovered that the CIA had known about Stratus' condition for years. Apparently, it had never occurred to anyone that it might be a good idea to pass the word along to Superman.
That's bureaucracy for you. The wheels grind slowly, if at all.
It makes me wonder what else they've forgotten to tell me over the years.
At least you finally learned something.
I'm not sure. But somebody had stuck needles into his head, and I'd swear that someone or something is behind this freakish weather. It all seems targeted. The weather has hit the hardest in areas where members of the Justice League live. We've all been kept hopping, playing catch-up with emergency rescues. This is the first real break I've had since I got back from Europe. If someone is using Stratus' technology against us...
There is no way that you are responsible for that. And whatever's going on, you don't have to deal with it alone. If this is affecting the rest of the Justice League, it's their fight too.
I've already put out a call for an emergency planning meeting of the JLA's current active membership. That's the other reason why I wanted to be with you today. The meeting is tonight, and depending on how this pans out, we may all become very busy.
Meaning?
Meaning it may be quite a while before we're able to enjoy another meal together. I'm sorry, hon.
Hey, I knew what I was getting into the day I said I do. And I'd gladly say it all over again. Just remember, I'm always here for you. For that matter, so are Jonathan and Martha.
I know. I've been thinking about the folks a lot lately.
As well you should. Martha and Jonathan are a couple of gems.
Believe me, I know it.
You'd better. Didn't you tell me once that some big storm snowed them in just after they found you?
Yeah, it did. Pa mentioned that just last week. They both lived through a lot of wild weather out on the plains.
So, talk to them about this, too. Get their perspective. It couldn't hurt.
The sun bore down on central Kansas, baking the soil until it cracked. In rural Lowell County, Jonathan Kent sat on the back porch swing, fanning himself with a copy of the Smallville Daily Ledger. His attention was on a tiny portable television, tuned to a cable news station.
Oh, there you are! What are you doing watching TV outside?
Too hot to watch it inside.
Well, it's not that much cooler out here.
I know, but the cable doesn't reach down to the cellar, and sometimes there is a hint of breeze.
Well, maybe this will help.
Martha stepped out onto the porch with a pitcher of lemonade and two tall glasses of ice on a tray.
Ah, looks like a good start. Thank you, sweetie. There's room on the swing for you, you know.
Oh, you old flirt. So I'm still your sweetie, after all these years.
None other. Here's to us. Oh, yeah. That does hit the spot.
Don't drink it too fast. It'll go to your head. What's on the news?
Weather. It's crowding everything else out. Seems there's heavy flooding down in Houston. Looks like they're getting the rain we need. It's a dirty shame we can't swap some of this. Corn's never going to grow if this keeps up.
Oh, Jonathan, look. It's Clark.
Huh? Where?
On the television. After the record-shattering rainstorm, quick, John, turn it up.
Throughout the area, we thank the speedy arrival of the Man of Steel, whom authorities are now crediting with the rescue of over 50 people over the past half day.
What the devil? Oh, don't tell me the power's out. Great. On top of everything else, we've lost power. Probably too many people in town running their air conditioners again.
Well, there's no good in complaining, Jonathan. It's not the first time, and it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, you're right, hon. Yeah, I guess I'd better get out to the barn and see if I can start up that dang generator?
Jonathan and Martha looked at each other. Then both of them jumped off the porch and dashed for the barn. Inside, they were greeted by the sight of their son, stripped to the waist and holding a 500-pound running generator balanced on his shoulder.
Clark!
Hi, folks. Give me just a minute, will you?
He nudged a row of cinder blocks back into place with the side of one foot, then carefully lowered the running engine down onto the blocks.
That's better. It wasn't until after I fired up the generator that I realized it wasn't seated quite properly. Barn floor must be warping a little.
Oh, Clark.
Oh, don't get too close yet, Ma. My hands are kind of greasy.
He rapidly ran his palms together, and a tiny plume of smoke curled up and away from them.
There. Anything else on me?
Martha picked up a clean rag from a nearby workbench and brushed some dirt from his shoulder.
There you go. That's the worst of it. But you'll want to come in and clean up. Where's your shirt?
Tossed it over on the straw bale. I knew if it got dirty, you'd just want to wash it. Figured I'd save you the effort and the water.
Oh, you.
Ha! Good to see you, son. Thanks for getting our power back up. But the TV showed you down in Texas.
I was. But that was a good 10 minutes ago. What you saw must have been on tape. And yes, Ma, I had a very nice lunch with Lois just a couple of hours before that.
All right, Smarty. You can tell us all about your day after you've had a chance to wash up.
She picked up Clark's shirt and took him by the arm.
Come along now. I just made a big batch of fresh lemonade.
Now, how could I pass on an offer like that?
Minutes later, Clark pulled up a stool and joined his parents on the porch for lemonade and conversation.
Yeah, son, it's been on the dry side all spring. This past week has been a killer. Just bone dry all the way to the Rockies. Gonna be a bad year for crops if we don't get some rain soon.
Do you really think someone could be responsible for all this, dear?
Directly responsible? I don't know. But if Stratus' mystery man is causing enough extreme cases in enough places, the weather everywhere might ultimately be affected. Like knocking over dominoes.
Yeah, I could see how that would work. Especially on the plains. Wind gets started out here, there's not much to stop it. Lord knows we've seen a lot of hellacious storms over the years.
Like on the day I was born?
One of the biggest.
Tell me the story, Pa. Tell me again.
Martha lay her hand on Jonathan's shoulder, and he touched it gently.
Clark, there's not much about that day that I am ever going to forget. It was November. Still fall by the calendar, but it was already starting to feel like winter. The radio had warned of a big storm blowing in from the west. So your mom and I were outside, battening down the last of the shutters. That's how we come to see this bright light shoot across the sky, pass low over the house, and just miss grazing the roof of the barn. About a second later, there was a big boom in the ground, the barn, the whole house shook. The thing had been so bright and passed over us so fast, I thought it had to be a meteor. Your ma was afraid it was a small plane. Anyway, we hopped in the old truck and headed out across the fields to see if we could find out what it was. And there, in the far corner of the back 40, sitting in a shallow crater, that's where we found your spaceship. It was like a big silvery egg, all scarred and pitted, and it was smoking. First, we didn't know what to make of it, but the egg was sort of translucent, and Martha swore she could see something moving just under the surface. I was still wearing my work gloves, so I reached out all cautious-like. I expected the egg to be hot, but it wasn't. And as I ran my hand over the surface, darned if the shell of the egg didn't begin to melt away at my touch. And inside the shell, I could see a pair of eyes looking back at me. Then a little mouth opened up and began to wail. I just stood there with my jaw down around my collarbone. I remember Martha shouting, "It's a baby!" And she pushed past me and gathered you up into her arms. By the time we got you home, your ma here already had you named. She was bound and determined to keep you.
And that's when the storm hit?
I'll say it did. Flurries were already swirling as we pulled up beside the house. I had no sooner put that truck away than old Mama Nature hit Lowell County, most of Kansas really, with the worst blizzard in over 100 years. Smack! Dumped a good 4 to 6 feet of snow around here. We had some drifts up to the eaves. It's a good thing our larder was full, because we didn't get back into town for going on 5 months. And when we finally did, we had ourselves a new son to show off. You know, we had a couple of miscarriages and some false alarms, and, well, when we told everybody that we'd been keeping a new try a secret, they believed us. Told them I delivered you myself, which, now that I think of it, that was more or less true. I never get tired of telling that story. You and Martha are just about the only ones I can tell it to.
Yes, dear, we know. Everyone was so happy for us, Clark. They really wanted to believe you were our own. People were always saying how much they thought you took after my great-grandfather Conrad.
Yeah, or my great-uncle Truman. No one ever suspected that we'd found you in a rocket or that you'd come to us from another planet.
Well, even we didn't know about that other planet business then, Clark. And didn't for years. I thought that we'd rescued you from some awful experiment.
Speak for yourself, Martha. I always suspected something, son. I wasn't exactly sure what, but that ship of yours didn't look like anything the Russians had ever made. And it sure shooting wasn't American.
Well, the important thing is that we didn't care where you were from. We just raised you as our own.
And if you don't mind my saying so, you did a fine job of it, both of you.
Thank you, Clark. It's sweet of you to say that.
I'm serious. You've always been here for me. When I had to make the hard decisions about what to do with my life, you helped me create Superman. When I think about all the hours you spent just sewing the capes. If we hadn't come up with the Superman identity and figured out how to make him seem like a different man from Clark Kent, I don't know what I would have done.
We all do what we can, son. That's all anyone can do. You're just able to do more than most is all.
Still, it's hard enough just raising a growing boy. You had one who kept growing stronger and developing strange new powers. It couldn't have been easy.
Well, you'd been normal enough at first.
Started when you were about 8. I remember one day I saw a neighbor's bull just go and trample all over you, son. Just about had a heart attack right there. I was sure I'd find you all bloodied and broken. But you didn't have a scratch on you.
And it wasn't long after that when I caught you lifting up the back of our old truck in search of your softball.
And then everything else came, seemingly one right after another. By the time you hit puberty, you could see through solid objects. And right before senior year,
I could fly.
But you were such a good boy through it all. I wouldn't have traded you for any other child in the world.
And what your ma just said goes double for me. What you've accomplished with your life has done us proud.
I had good role models. I only wish I could make sense of this weather mess.
You will, son. Just remember, you're not alone in this.
Lois used almost those exact words earlier today.
You found yourself one smart wife, Clark. Of course, so did I.
Oh, you.
Do we know how to pick them? Or what?